Welcome to another episode of What in the World, the podcast where we talk about all the shit you don't really talk about in public, except for the incorrect stuff. I am Anatara. I have with me Dave Burke.
Hello.
And Lisa Frith.
Hello.
Or should I say, hello.
This is our Samhain episode, When the Veil Thins. Some of you know this as Halloween. There are two times a year when the veil thins. One is at the end of October, beginning of November, and one is the end of April, beginning of May. And the one in the fall is really good for contacting ancestors and all that sort of thing. But either way, we get to cross the veil a bit, and things that are on the other side of the veil also get to cross the veil a bit. So it's spooky time. It is one of my favorite holidays. It is, in some traditions, the point where you start the year. It is the end of the year, beginning of the next year. So I don't know where I start my year, but whatever. What you got for me?
So people who know me and have known me for a while know that I used to do paranormal investigations. So I've maintained a lot of friendships with people in that field and who continue to do it, even though I've kind of stepped up. So I happened across an entry on Facebook of someone that I know, and they say they find it absolutely hilarious how paranormal research teams get a preponderance of case requests near Halloween. And then they, and I'm not going to read the whole thing, but then they, as a paranormal investigator, just kind of put it all off to subliminal messaging and marketing. And
I mean, there is some of that.
Sure. I mean, I'm not going to deny that that couldn't be a factor, but I just thought it was kind of strange how someone, and I can't go into more detail because otherwise it would, I don't want to offend the person, but but to just write it all off as that, being as involved as they are in the paranormal field, just kind of feels like it's giving it short shrift because of this whole thinning of the veil concept. And I was actually going to answer, you know, I was going to post a comment to that effect. I decided not to, but, and I don't think that any offense would have been taken, but it would have involved probably some backtracking and stuff like that. But, yeah, so I just thought that that was an interesting thing. And so, you know, we were going to talk about the thinning of the veil and all that stuff. So,
I mean, you know, I certainly get a lot more requests for readings and stuff. This is the time of year when people have parties where they want like a tarot reader to come in and whatever.
Sure. You know, I just thought that that would be a good jumping off point to start talking about, you know, the veil thinning and ways that can manifest.
Sure.
Especially combined with the commercialism.
Yeah. Well, I mean, let's talk about the pop culture view of Halloween. Let's start there. You know, the dressing up and all that stuff, you know, originally in a number of cultures, you dressed up as the things that you imagined were coming across the veil so that they wouldn't recognize you. You know, that was kind of the point of that.
Wow.
Yeah. It was camouflage.
They were coming to get you, Barbara.
Well, and I mean, some of it also was probably, you know, a solidarity sort of a thing, like, hey, let's fit in. But you know, it's framed in a lot of research, and I have a problem with some of the research, but whatever, I usually do. Bias and all of that, but it's often framed as, you know, trying to not be recognized, or, you know, to not be a target. And then you have commercial stuff, yay.
And then isn't it interesting how, you know, coming from a Western tradition, it tends to be more spooky and solemn and even scary and threatening, whereas you get to like the Latinx culture, and you know, and you get Dia de los Muertos, right? And it's much more of a celebration. And even some of the Asian cultures, it's much more of a celebration and a respect.
In India too, as well. I realize it's part of Asia, but it's not what we think of as Asian culture in America. Yeah, and even some of the European spaces, especially the ones that are more old school, traditional, old world kind of stuff. You know, yeah, it's a point in time where you connect with the ancestors because the veil is thin. You know, I am one who allies myself with the ancestors through the entire year. I happen to think that, you know, they are helpful. I also don't consider ancestors, at least for me, to be purely bloodline. You know, spiritual ancestry, and then there's just, you know, admiring and loving the people who have come before me. You know, there are absolutely cultures who will see the heroes of their culture as being someone you venerate at this time of year. And I have a number of such people on my ancestor altar, which again is up all year long, as well as friends who have passed and the occasional relative. I come from a small family, so, you know. Yeah, it is supposed to be a time where we get to work with the dead. You know, I absolutely don't believe that once somebody's dead, they just become all, you know, love and light. You know, if they were an asshole in life, they're probably an asshole ghost too. But in general, you know, so don't ally yourself with those people. But in general, they do have an expanded view, or they can have an expanded view of what's going on. And they also can, you know, muck about with energy a little bit more than we can, perhaps. And so they can be helpful allies. I also feel that because the veil is thin, we can also contact, you know, energies that have stepped sideways. So like the Anasazi and stuff like that, as well as, you know, angelic stuff, deity stuff, however you want to look at it. And so any being that is otherworldly or passed on as we see it is much more contactable at this time. And therefore, it's a good time to celebrate them and to ask them for help if there's something you need help for. Also, you know, one of my astrologers that I follow, you know, she likes to point out that, you know, if you only call Aunt Macy once a year, she's probably not going to lend you money. and so, you know, having a connection with the ancestors, however you phrase that, or the deities, do it year long if you're going to want their help. You know, they're much more likely to help you out if you talk to them on a regular basis than, you know, if you call them in once a year. By the way, just so people know, astrological Samhain is not the same as what we celebrate it as. You know, in our culture, we're very calendar tied. And so, you know, Halloween is the 31st of October, and Dia de los Muertos is what, like the 1st or 2nd of November? Astrological Samhain technically is the midpoint, the cross quarter, in between solstice and equinox, or equinox and solstice. And so actually falls this year on November 5th or 7th. I can't remember which. I think it's the 7th. I'm doing ceremony on the 5th, but I feel like the actual day is the 7th. Anyway, you get 3 days leeway either side. But yeah, it's not necessarily the day on the calendar. It's an astrological date. And so if you really want the big juju, you know, do it on the actual astrological date.
Yeah. And then it seems that a lot of people forget that the day after, you know, in the US, the day after Halloween is called All Saints Day.
Right.
Which is still connected, right? It's still got...
Absolutely.
I mean, the way our society's interpreted is you do the debauchery and the scary things the night before, and then you ask forgiveness the next day, right?
So Western.
Yeah. You know, so that all ties in, and, you know, and again, it's just, you know, the Catholic Church, you know, appropriating a certain thing from other cultures to
sure.
make themselves more relevant and make that bridging a little easier for.
Oh, they celebrate this day anyway. Let's put our holiday there, and that just kind of like shifts it over into the castles.
So
in our churches.
Yeah, fill the churches. Got to do that because you got to collect that tithe, right? But also, I came across an article, and it's so not scientific, which is what bothers me about this survey. But basically, they put up a question on YouGov, and 45% of the people who responded say they believe in supernatural creatures. Interestingly enough, people of the more conservative persuasion are more readily express the belief in demons and ghosts and generally negative things, which I found interesting. Which, I mean, you know, it's pretty easily kind of explained why those numbers are the way they are, because, well, I don't want to go into it because...
Well, I mean, people who are more likely to respond to a thing like that already have an opinion.
Sure. But also, you know, I came across a couple of articles that I guess maybe they asked the people who are involved in the paranormal investigation field. They asked them, you know, basically what's going on. And they both replied that, you know what, since the isolations have happened, we're getting more reports of paranormal activity. Now, whether or not it's legit, you know, again, with that field, it's like, no, 90% of what gets reported is easily explained away by natural things. Sure. Or by my mundane things, I should put it that way. But they're saying that there's more reports, and, you know, some of the rationale was, well, people are home more. There was actually one guy said that one of the reasons that they may be getting more reports is that the spirits or whomever is in your home may be kind of not angry, but they're annoyed that you're home all the time. You know, normally they get a break from you. You're gone. You're at work. You're doing whatever. But now you're here all the damn time.
So it's like your toddler, okay, your teenager, really. I suspect it's more that we are in a pause. You know, there is an energy to what's been going on in the pandemic where we are in a pause, and when you pause, your sensitivity levels go up. Yeah. Theoretically, I know they have for a lot of us. And so you notice more stuff that you wouldn't notice normally because you're doing. No, somebody said you have to sit still and nobody has any choice. And so all of a sudden we're noticing more things.
Yeah. Plus people are doing less. There's a lot more stress involved.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. In the air, you know, that brings certain reactions as well. So I just... That was really interesting.
Did your connection just get hella unstable?
I'm not getting any messages.
Okay. You broke up a whole bunch during that. I don't know if somebody doesn't want you to say whatever it was you were saying.
It's the ghost.
A little bit ago, we played... Oh, you know what? Let's talk about this. Since we're talking about current events and that sort of thing. Heard of the zombie storms. So the way the earth is behaving, or the weather patterns are behaving right now, they have actually tracked some storms that have petered out and then come back. Like they weren't.
I was picturing like a whirlwind of zombies.
Yeah, I know. The creative title, right?
Zombie virus.
But they were I don't know if it had actually reached the level of a hurricane, but it was at least a tropical storm and it petered out. But the way the weather patterns are now, it's actually back and upgraded to at least tropical storm level. And so this is not something that's very common. But
it didn't used to be.
Yeah. And
new normal.
Yeah, I mean, we've done enough to the environment, you know, as the planet. So it's not global warming as a whole. Let me start there. You know, parts of the globe get hotter, parts of the globe get colder, but either way, all of the weather patterns become more extreme. And so, Yeah, I mean, resurrected, I'm going to go with resurrected. Resurrected storms are absolutely starting to become a thing, and I think they're actually going to become much more prevalent. Get out of New Orleans.
Funny you mentioned New Orleans.
Oh, I gave a segue. Cool.
You did. Although it's a terrible segue because I was going to do word association, and New Orleans was going to do was going to be one of them, actually. So, okay, so New Orleans, get out. Okay, so that's the word association there. Any hits on Skinwalker Ranch?
Ooh.
Title's fun.
Terrible book that I read about it, but yeah.
Skinwalker Ranch. Mm-hmm. Absolutely nothing. That's fascinating. I rarely get nothing from you, so.
Yeah, it's starting to get more notoriety, but it's a long, it's a, well, I mean, within the paranormal circles, it's a known place for, this is what annoyed me about the book, Skinwalker Ranch. You would expect skinwalkers. There was nothing about skinwalkers in this damn book. Although now apparently there are some things, but the way the book was written, it really described much more extraterrestrial and UFO type of activity. Strange lights, cattle mutilations, that sort of thing. And a government research thing was headed up there at one point.
I just saw a picture posted of it. I don't know if it was the government expedition, but within the past week, an expedition at Skinwalker, and they showed all the mainly males. I don't remember if there were any females, but anyway, and at least one AK-47 or whatever. And I'm thinking, I don't know if what you guys are coming across is something AK-47s help with. But anyway,
it's funny what people in fear do. Yeah. Well, I mean, the term skinwalker to me can very much involve off-worlders. You know, I mean, we've talked about before the fact that, you know, I don't differentiate that much between angels, aliens, and gods. So, yeah, and angels can include fallen angels, so there you go. But, you know, a skinwalker is a hitchhiker.
Yeah.
Sometimes they're just a hitchhiker. Sometimes they want to drive. Sometimes it's a carjacking. But so separating that out from ET stuff doesn't make sense to me. But
okay, so continuing with, it's not really word association now, is it? Association. So the Ancient Ram Inn. Wow, your face just went whoop.
I got a flash of a pub sign, which is fascinating. There's a vortex there, or a doorway. Vortex, a lot of people have a positive association with. I don't necessarily. Sure. Portal is the word I want. It doesn't feel like whoever's coming through are friendlies. And there's a lot of anger energy around that. It was built on uninvited ground. And it seems to have an energy of death around it, like violent death. I don't know. Tell me about it.
So it's an inn, duh.
Sure.
In Watton Under Edge, in the UK. And
yeah, with a name like that, it's got to be the UK.
it is actually fairly notorious. Is a really good way to describe it. Interesting that you talked about a portal, because that is one of its claims to infamy or fame, however you want to classify it. Sure. You know, whether or not it's over exaggerated, they call it the portal to hell. Very, very negative things coming out of it.
Sure.
If anyone wants to go see, I'm not going to promote that show because I can't do that. I refuse at this point. But let's suffice to say that there are certain TV shows that have gone there and done stupid things. And, yeah.
TV shows usually do.
Yeah. But yeah, it is very old. And one of the interesting things about it is It's rumored to be the first home of the town vicar, which that's kind of an interesting thing in the history and where it, you know, the things surrounding it these days.
Well, I mean, vicars have notoriously shitty energy, if you ask me, but yeah. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. But I mean, but that's, it's pretty notorious as a haunted place.
Sure.
In its area. Okay, so next one. Where do we want to go? How about the Paris catacombs?
Ah, I hate the Paris catacombs. Oh my God. So when I was in Paris in 2000, I think it was 2000, the person I was with was like, hey, let's go to the catacombs. So we went to the catacombs and about 15 minutes in, I started getting heavier and heavier and heavier. And it was really hard for me to walk. And he almost had to carry me out. Mm-hmm. It was so, the energy in there is so oppressive and so just grabby. And, you know, as much as I don't think most Europeans give a shit whether they've been buried or what has happened with their bones, these folks were unhappy. Scary for me. I don't scare easy for you know, woo stuff. But yeah, it was scary to me mostly because it felt like I was having a hard time getting out. And it drained like all my energy. This is great. My voice is going now. It drained all my energy. It was so uncomfortable. I never want to do that again. And people have suggested the catacombs under, what is it, Rome to me. And I'm like, yeah, no, I tried one catacombs and I'm over it. You know, it was interesting to me at first. And once it was happening, I was like, yeah, no, this is not the place for me. Maybe in a wheelchair. the ground, by the way, is terrible for wheelchairs. But yeah, not my favorite.
Okay. What about Wycliffe Well?
Wells are always interesting. I'm keying more off of the word Wycliffe, though, than off of the well. It feels like a place where a lot of dowsers have played. That's interesting. Played may be the wrong word, but you know, whatever. But wells are always interesting because they are frequently, you know, at the crossing of several ley lines, which I think we've talked about in a previous episode. But I see stuff coming up out of the well. That's fascinating. And it's really funny because it's, to me, it's like the traditional idea of ghosts, like not even ghosts, but the word has fallen out of my head, but with like the tattered clothes and the kind of white and see-through with like the rotting faces just flying up out of it. And I doubt that that's what's actually happening, but there's like this very interesting energy there that brings that up. Okay. Tell me about Wycliffe Well.
So I don't know much about it. I was looking at the most paranormally active places in the world. And this came up, and I'd never heard of it, but it's in the Northern Territory in Australia. And it is known, it's actually a place. I don't know if there's an actual well there, but Wycliffe Well is the name of the place. And the road, the road to Wycliffe from another place, I can't remember the other place's name, but it is supposed to be one of the most active UFO areas in the world. And to the point where I remember reading that a guy who lives there said, oh, I used to do tours and I used to be amazed by all this stuff that went on. And now it's just like an everyday thing. Like he
doesn't. Isn't Australia like really sighting heavy to begin with?
Yes.
Yeah.
And Wycliffe Wells also, I believe, has a ton of petroglyphs and is sacred ground with the Aboriginals, if I recall. Now that you said Australia, it kind of clicks a bell.
Well, yeah, I mean, I am getting some ancestor stuff there. The Aboriginal culture on Australia, in Australia, which still feels like an island to me, so on Australia, are the closest we come to to have that transpersonal memory. I think I talked about that in a previous episode. They have much more of a shared memory. And so the ancestors are very different to them. And, you know, I think there are more sightings in Australia, A, because it hasn't been mucked with as much. And B, well, because it hasn't been mucked with as much, the sacred ground hasn't been as desecrated as you get like in Europe and America and stuff like that. And also the entire, keep wanting to call it an island, the entire island is, you know, originally populated by people who don't give a fuck, you know? And so it's a much more accepting place. And so, you know, if I'm knocking on doors, I'm going to be happier to knock on doors for people who pay attention and open the door. But also there's less doubting energy.
Okay. So here's an interesting place.
We're over time.
Bummer. Yura's going to ask about Beijing. Go on.
All right. as I said, we are out of time. We're slightly over, in fact. Go us. So thank you very much for joining us for another episode of What in the World. I am Ayama Natara, and I have been with Dave Burke.
Hello.
And Lisa Frith.
And goodbye.
Please join us for our next episode. Thanks very much.